caught in the crossfire of Drake, Kendrick Lamar, and Jake Shields. You never thought you'd hear those three names together, did you? But this show does it, baby. Live and in public, if you will, on this week's episode of The Shoes Fit, a show where you solve salacious situations by stepping into the shoes of the shaken, the chagrined, the kerfuffed. I'm your host, Lexi Old, author. Seven secret sources of inspiration, a snappy guide for creative procrastinators, and joining me, guests John Nash from Hey Not the Face podcast and Eugene S. Robinson, author of the memoir A Walk Across Dirty Water and Straight into Murderer's Row. There you go. Collectively, the Pancholes.
Pancholes, 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 Pancholes.
Now subscribe, subscribe, subscribe if you haven't already. Hit that like button, please. And join our Patreon, patreon.com/theshoesfit. And let's get this step on Eugene.
Sir.
Some of the shoes of anyone in the Jake Shields ecosystem. Your boy, Jake, was put on blast for allegedly making an anti-Semitic comment to a political provocateur. Now people are asking you to comment for Jake, your boy. Whether you are a Scrap Pack member, whether you are a gym member, whether you're a friend, family member, or business compadre, how do you reply live and in public, if you will?
Well, it's funny you should ask because, of course, as might be known, I am a known associate of Jake Shields. Knew his father. I've known Jake for about since I was doing Fight Club, so 2000 maybe 2001. It's a long time. And I remember when he and Gil were roommates and there were, you know, iron burns in the carpet. They're living like bachelors to see him in his luxury apartment down over by the Embarcadero. You know what, there's a whole category of men, there's a whole category of people, men specifically, who get completely upended. It's like a Caligula thing when their anchor passes. In this instance, it was his father. I don't know whether his father shared the beliefs, but I think his father would understand the PR ramifications of sharing those beliefs. You know, his father died, and I emotionally, I don't have any inside track on how Jake feels about any of this, but the unforced errors have been many, and when you end your tweet with, "He lies like a Jew," you're pretty much killing any prospect of a continued life in this industry in a way that's significant. So unless you're ready to switch fields or other sports are beckoning, or maybe just because of sheer human decency. And people have tried to draw me into discussions about Jake. I haven't seen Jake face to face in about 5 years, but people try to draw me. This is your guy. Why don't you? I was like, look, it's not my job to politically educate Jake. However, the fallout from this is going to be significant. He was doing a seminar, I think, with Nick or Nate or somebody, and it was already canceled because of aggressive resistance, you know, from people who were like, don't want to be associated with the weirdness and the crap. So pretty much, you know, it's a public forum. You know, if you say that somebody lies like a Jew, if I don't know the nuance or the subtlety of that point that you were trying to make, but it's completely blown out. I mean, the only way it could have been worse is if you said that such and such Tim Pool, I think was a guy in character, lies like a kike. And that would be pretty bad. Yeah, but he's gotten as close as humanly possible to that. And I don't know, you know, he just doesn't care about money. He's friends with Milos Yiannopoulos, and he's friends with this guy, the right-wing neo-Nazi guy, Nick, whatever his name is. Yeah, so Nick Fuentes, I mean, he finds common cause with these guys. And it doesn't, I mean, he's still friends with Jake and Nick, and I mean, with Gil and Nick and Nate. I just, you know, I guess you get kind of resolve yourself to having your friends do weird shit. But this is very, very bad for the Jake Shields business.
What's your take, John?
Well, first, you gotta clarify what tweet, because there are several tweets that are offensive and in the field of pro-Nazism. So I guess which one particular is he? Yes, you lie like a Jew. There's also the one where he had a very sympathetic take of Goebbels, because he had to kill his children because of the rape of the Russians. And then I think there's another one where after that, it just kept building on one after the other of him defending his previous tweet, where, you know, there's more evidence of the Russian rape than the gas chambers, and one thing after another. So as I guess the position I'm as PR is, we are supposed to talk about by someone in his sphere, basically to protect yourself. Well, the first one is to fall by that old standby and say, listen, this is not the Jake I used to know. And all I can think of is CTE is really taking a toll on him. I think that's the easiest one, right? The other possibility, if you don't want to go the CTE route, is just say Jake is an effing Nazi. I mean, he's hanging out with Nick Fuentes. As soon as you said that, I go, it's hard to not say that you're – okay, listen, I don't want to say Jake Shields is a Nazi. I'm not going to come out and say he's a Nazi. But he's Nazi adjacent. Let's put it that way. He's hanging out with people that are very pro Nazi and espousing Nazi sympathies. And so the other step is to say, listen, I have nothing to do with the guy anymore. As soon as he started revealing himself to be this way, I want nothing to do with him. That would be my other case to make. So beyond that, I do not know what other out you would say in the sphere. Now, for Jake Shields, the simple out for him is say, I'm an effing idiot. Listen, I'm a fighter. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I get hit in the head. I went down a rabbit hole. I was trying to be edgy towards someone. I didn't put two and two together when I did this. And in hindsight, I look back, I go, man, that's a terrible thing to say. But being a fighter, not being the smartest man in the world, that's what I did, and I want to apologize. That would be his out. And I think a lot of people would accept it, because, like, yeah, you're a fighter. You might not be the smartest guy, and you might not be the sharpest tool in the shed. But no, he's going to, because a lot of them think they're smart as hell. And I think Jake Shields, one of those guys who thinks he's a lot smarter than he is. And so that's not a defense he can use. So yeah, if I'm Eugene here, I go, that guy's got CTE. I can tell you right now. And he's a Nazi, and that's it. So,
well, you know, you also have to realize that, like, people talk about they found H.L. Mencken's diaries and about all this, like, racist, sexist stuff in there. And I was like, are you kidding me? H.L. Mencken didn't have to wait 50 years to release that stuff. He could have walked out to 42nd Street in New York City and read that, and people would have been like, what? Like, blacks are inferior? What? That's a good common accepted fact. Mexicans are lazy? What? I mean, in other words, the times were different. In this instance, it's not so much the times, but the associates. I mean, in MMA, you got a lot of fighters who, how many fighters from Brazil support Bolsonaro, who's actively advocated murdering gay people, right? How many have met with people who have actually murdered gay people in Chechnya? I mean, we can't pretend that Jake's an outlier here, right?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
Beyond belief. You know, the situation with Jake Shields, like, when you know a person and then they just go down a certain path, you know, I think that almost everybody, I think, you know, definitely in the past, you know, since Bernie versus Hillary, experienced that, if they didn't experience it beforehand. I mean, the situations in which, you know, you can be around people who, because of some change in religion, some kind of ethnic exposure, or some kind of change or shock in their life, they just go down a certain path, and having to reconcile constantly the person you knew and what the person's become, and trying to salvage, like, the relationship, and, you know, and to try to say, okay, you know what, let's see if we can have this friendship without going down a certain path. And the thing is, especially with, when you look at Jake's, not being a friend of his or an associate at all, you know, looking at his timeline, like, it's totally consistent with individuals that go down a certain kind of path and in a dark space and a rabbit hole, in the sense that,
well,
everything's going back to that. And then you might get a glimmer of who they once were. And then it doesn't take that long for it to go back that road. And at the end of the day, you know, it's one thing when you have an associate, it's one thing when you have a coworker or a family member, to have these ties with individuals where just these major deal breakers and what, you know, and trying to salvage a relationship and realize, you know what, the person I knew is gone. You know, I don't know if they're ever coming back, but they're gone.
What do you think the chances are that this is some form of audience capture with him? That he's a guy that was something no one in a fighter kind of forgot now and then modern, you know, no one laughs. But you start espousing stupid shit on Twitter, there's an audience that rallies behind you and he finds an audience that he can go to.
Your echo chamber.
He's now important. And the audience keeps, he has to feed more and more because now he's in the Nick Fuentes camp.
Well, you're saying that he's like, are you saying from a cynical opportunist, true believer or what?
No, I don't think but you start, because you're getting reinforcement from that, you go more and more in that direction. It's not that you have to be cynical about it. You can become a firm believer, but it's like they do studies on political, people that are on one political party and they find themselves abandoned by their party and join the other one. Guess what? Their beliefs start mirroring the other people that they join because those people are on their side and they support them. And so,
And that's what I said. I mean, the first social media casualty I had was with me and Josh the Punk Thompson, who I've known for a long time, right? One of the first people when I was interviewing somebody at AKA, he's like, hey, why don't you interview me? And had him on Knuckle Up, and but then he started espousing, like, he's in the wilderness, right? He's fighting Strike Force. He finally gets to the UFC, and using the newfound power of social media and the internet, he says something to the effect of, isn't homosexuality just bestiality? And he crossed the line for me at that point, right? So I'm like, I start arguing in the days when I would do such things on the internet and argue with him and just break. And then when I saw him again at a Strike Force event in San Jose, he was cordial, but it was just barely. It was like, oh, hey, Eugene. And I'm like, hey, Josh, because the dividing line between what's said in the computer and in real life. But I mean, again, he wasn't alone. He wasn't alone. I mean, there's a weird amalgam of like religious lunacy based, with right-wing sympathies. That's pretty much textbook definition of, I mean, some of these people are genuinely excited to have Trump at the UFC events. I don't really understand it myself, but and I would have said that no matter who was there, I want presidents to do some presidenting. And when they're not presidenting, I want them building houses like Jimmy Carter. I don't want them at fucking sporting events. So I don't know. I don't know. The thing with Jake is completely baffling. And there's no way he will never say, he will never admit fault. He will never change his position. And, at this point he's paid no real social price for it because the people that he's friends with are people who prize loyalty and it doesn't reflect on them badly necessarily. So he's just going to keep on keeping on. Nobody's asking him to fight anymore. Right.
It's kind of funny. It reminds me of when Conor McGregor like started getting involved in Irish politics and the stabbing. And then you see this reinforcement that he was in. I guess piggybacking what you guys are saying, but he was getting this reinforcement, the likes that he had for his, here's a new whiskey, like maybe 10, 15 likes. Then he writes something about training, maybe 20 likes. And then he just writes something crazy about foreigners in Ireland and it's like thousands of likes. And so it's just this, I have this audience again, the people are with me, and so,
my name is on everyone's lips.
Yeah. You don't realize that that's this group that's only here and the rest of the 90% of the population look at it like you're an asshole. They miss that. That's the one good thing out of this. The one good thing out of Jake Shields and other fighters acting this way, it makes you feel less bad that they got really screwed over by the promoter. You kind of feel like, I'm kind of happy that you really got hosed when you were in front of 50,000 in Canada and only got a few hundred thousand, which, when instead of millions like Bach, I don't feel as bad for you. So that's
I have some good Jake quotes when he when the UFC rolled the backed up the truck for him. He's like, I'll never have to worry about being poor again. I don't know how well that aged.
It's funny. He probably got really excited. He got like he got under half a million for fighting GSP. That's his biggest purse ever, which, people UFC fighters like, that's the big, oh my God, I can't believe I made that much. And you're like, dude, you're in the Toronto Superdome. You sold 800,000 pay-per-views. They ran a special ad campaign with the two of you against each other. You got taken badly. Yeah. And I feel good about it now. At the time, I felt bad. But now I feel really good that you got taken.
It's kind of sad when you think of these careers as this windows in terms of being able to make a lot of money and how, you know, lost financial opportunities. And then when you look back again, you think about like the time period in which, you know, there was this window that was closing. It, the further away you get from it, the smaller it seems, right? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Speaking of interesting what happens, John, Seven Shoes of John Nash. When I asked you what you wanted to discuss tonight, you replied, quote, between Stormy, Melania, and Trump's possible contempt, something definitely Trump, end quote, for the uninitiated, like I was. I just say, what? Let me look up each one of these. And I said, you know what? Instead of trying to puzzle my way through this, let me bring the man himself, John Nash, to explain what the heck do you mean live and in public, if you will. See, it could go a different
sexy music, John. That's a lead-in.
OnlyFans. There you go. Go Jackie G's line.
Between the meth and Oscar, it's kind of hard to get myself back in the mindset earlier today when I sent that. But I believe I was actually responding to Eugene's message about what the subject should be. And Eugene said something about Trump. And I was pointing out there's all these other news stories involving Trump, and any of them would work. And we're going to go through them really quickly for the uninitiated, the clueless. And I can't remember.
Bamboozled.
Yeah, there was the Melania one is the whole point of people are pointing out that she never shows up with them anymore. And hand in hand with the Stormy Daniels, I guess, supposedly in testimony, Stormy Daniels was told by Trump that they sleep in separate bedrooms. And so the whole point is we could have went off a whole thing. What do you do about Melania? Do you stick with Trump or not when their marriage seems like just a sham? It's their
a mockery of a travesty of a sham.
Surely coverage. As people say, it's a beard to make it look like has a normal relationship, even though they don't. That's one thing we could have discussed. We could have discussed Stormy Daniels' testimony and how much was allowed in and how much wasn't, you know, because even though people made a big deal like, oh, she revealed all this stuff, a lot of it was she was forbidden from talking about a lot of subjects. We could have talked about that whole trial. We could talk about the possible contempt of court that Trump went through when instead of just going to his son's graduation, he went and did some event. And so there was that subject. There was, in other words, there was
punching his counsel, right? Like his female counsel.
Yes. Yes,
there was the fist pump when they were delivering damaging testimony to him, and everybody in the court's like, "You fucking! They just said something bad about you. What are you fist pumping for? You know?"
There's just an endless supply of Trump material we can work
still
with,
talk but... about. I just want to see in terms of just the mind, because I realize that if I'm out, I was out of the woods instead of being the bull of the woods, I was out of the woods, and I was like, "Well, what did happen?" And so I thought that, you know, given the being in touch with the Trumpgeist, the Trump zeitgeist, and understand what's going on, that you can just break down these stories to people, so we can still discuss. John, it's not a
Listen, when you need a Nash whisper,
the floodgates.
When you need a Nash whisper, there's no better person to go to than me to be the translate what John Nash means. You should go to me, because sometimes I don't even know what that guy's talking about. But come to me and I can usually figure it out.
You mean Nash John?
That guy. Who is that guy?
Yeah.
So
okay, you gonna anytime, well, John.
Well, I laid it out. Now you can pipe in there, Eugene. You can use your wisdom, your high class, upper class degree, and your professionalism and all that.
No, I don't know, man. I hate to say that this has made him somewhat of a sympathetic figure to me. I mean, bro, can you imagine sitting in that court knowing there's a pipeline to the newspapers that will come out the next day, if not immediately, if you're online, and that somewhere lurking in the darkness is your Eastern European wife. And don't you believe it for a second that she's choosing to not read it because they're all spurious lies. She's reading it. You know, or at the very least, she's having somebody read it for her. And man, oh man, oh man. And then like some things transcend everything else. So from the point of view of a married man or just a man, I just, oh God
Did it
damn it. I
humanize
mean,
him to you, Eugene?
huh?
Did it humanize him to you, or what?
I just was trying to imagine were I to be where he is right now. Bro, I just want to go home again. No, I mean, how are you gonna? There was a guy, a local teacher at a high school, a British guy. Everybody loved this guy, and somehow something came over him. A student came to him and asked for help with her biology test or something, and he started put his hands under her shirt and tried to kiss her, right? I mean, this is Palo Alto, man. She immediately left the classroom, went to the administration, reported the guy. The guy got busted, and he's in prison now. Guy's had a wife and two kids in the same school district. I think his wife even worked for the school district. It's like, how does
And
that
he
guy?
didn't
Well,
go
of
home,
course,
though. That's it. You said, don't go
he
home.
couldn't.
He's in
Yeah,
prison.
he could. Well, I think I think they came. Yo, that's right. He had to call his wife from jail and say, "Listen, there's been a terrible misunderstanding." It's like, fuck, 100-foot cliff dive into total stupidity. But Trump never saw himself running for president, never knew this would be an issue. I don't know. It's just, because I read every inch of the testament, every inch of the testimony that Stormy Daniels had about the spanking, about the bathrobe, about the her, being suckered into having sex with him, not really thinking that was a plan, the false offer of places on the show, as well as the sexual activity itself. I was like, no fucking dude needs a Siskel and Ebert take on his cocksmanship. Ah,
So then what do you do?
God.
Okay, so you brought, you brought up a good one then, based on what John laid out, which is, what do you do the next time you see, oh, what is your first communication with your wife? You're Trump, right? You're straight out of the
I just
courtroom.
if
Do
I'm
you
him, I just I
call?
just
Do you text? Do you
I
just
have my
show up? Do you, if so,
no.
when? Like, what's the, how do you lay it out?
I just call and I say, "Hey, listen. I know this has got to be terrible for you, and to just to if what you want to do is go now, I'd completely understand it. We got a prenup covering the deal. I'd let you, finagle with the prenup a bit. You take what you need and you leave. There's no reason for you to stay with me. That's what I would do. Mostly because it seems totally selfless and altruistic, but in reality, he's completely falling on his sword to avoid whatever inevitable horrible discussion has to come out of that, So I just, like Johnny Utah, pull the rip cord. I'm out. Good. Toodles, babe. Go. Why don't you get divorced? Here's a bunch of money. Please leave. I don't want to have to go home and discuss this.
Damn.
That's what would be my take. But
How'd you
I
handle
don't think
John?
that's the problem with Trump, because I think he's going to point out to her that you signed a non-disclosure. Here's the contractual agreements. This is how far you have to stay from me when I tell you to do, I'm sure it's laid out. It's not like he has a real spouse that has coming. It's like, no, we have we're part of a contractual agreement right now to make me look good for the election. That's it, and that's all I care
Yeah,
about. And I
and
don't
actually,
really.
I know I have a friend, and her husband is a flip case, and they have some kids together. And honestly, the kids don't even look like him, but that's another topic. And we started to think, why is she still with him? She clearly knows. And then we figured she knows better than anybody how crazy he is. So if he's crazy when he's with her, what she has to do to get her kids to college age, if they're separated, it's just not worth it to her. It's easier to suffer inside the house than it is with him outside the house, rooting around as crazy as he is, doing stuff that could be damaging to both her and her offspring. Just easier to stay. So maybe Melania, she got the separate bedroom, doesn't have to have sex with the guy, spend all of her time on her son and her parents, and dude's a couch-based memory. But
Damn.
I just first of all, as as Brian Cummings brought up about not Brian about
JB.
there's no bad publicity, right? Or I guess that's Candy S. Commie. Candy S. Commie. Sorry, I apologize, Candy. You guys look alike. that's no bad publicity. Trump, my brother pointed this out. I think it's so true. Trump has this thing called the bed of nails, a principle he calls it, where anybody else has a scandal, they step on a nail, it goes, oh my God, that hurts. You look at it and go, Jesus, there's a scandal. Look at the pain this guy's in. Trump, but you lay out a ton of scandals, in other words, a ton of nails, like a bed of nails, you could walk across it. And that's with Trump. There's so many scandals. No one pays attention. And the trial that's going ahead, the worst of the trials, they're doing the one about, sure, it's illegal. He did those business transactions illegal, technically, but no one looks at that as, everybody understands you don't want anybody to find out you're having an affair. Everybody understands why you would hide that. Where the other trials that are potentially more damaging, stuff like was he intentionally trying to, overturn the election? What about the secret? What was going on with all the secret documents? Those trials, we just learned the judge actually delayed on one. We're not going to hear those before the election. The ones that probably might have an impact. So I think no one's going to care about this, tell you the truth. That's the, it's just one of many things. I mean, there's so much shit that happens with Trump. I can't even keep track of all of it. What is amazing though, we have kind of a timeline. It is absolutely amazing and almost confirmed. He didn't want to be president. Half the stuff happened by accident. They made this big deal about this Russia conspiracy. Yeah, Trump conspired with the Russians because he didn't expect to be president. He was making deals to get hotels out there. He was thinking, I ain't going to win, doing deals left and right to see what kind of financial things he could get done for afterwards. And holy shit, I won. And we did all this stuff with the Russians. So that part's fascinating. And I hope more of that shit comes out. But at this point, that's been twisted so much no one even cares anymore about that even. So
I guarantee this has been great for everybody. I mean, Stormy Daniels is no longer acting now. She's producing and writing, and I guarantee you however people are making money with porn these days, that she's making a lot more of it as a result of this dalliance. It's paid itself off. The dividend has been quite substantial. But having to have sex with Trump, I don't think there's a dividend that could be high enough for that to be a compelling issue for anybody I know.
Well, speaking of compelling and people making money and benefiting, Eugene, step in the shoes of anyone in the Drake or Kendrick Lamar ecosystems with the paranoia running wild about leaks, snitches, and potential targets figuratively and literally caught in the crossfire of rich rap dudes feuding. How does your broke ass avoid unfriendly fire while protecting your gravy train live and in public, if you will?
Okay, hold on. That was so long. Who am I in this instance?
You're anyone. So when we're talking about Jake Shields, you're talking about the Jake Shields ecosystem. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, and people coming to you because of your affiliation with Jake Shields and the situation.
Right.
Now, in wake of Drake and Kendrick Lamar's feuding.
Gotcha. Right.
And there's talk about, there's snitches, that are feeding information to other camps. Oh, here's someone they're rapping about. Are they talking about you? Do you know who they're talking about? Right. And the fact that there's threats of violence as always, and different kinds of things happen. Allegedly, there was a shooter who was near one of Drake's properties. So the thing is that unlike Drake and Kendrick Lamar, who are rich and famous, right? If people say it's just rich dudes fighting, you're not rich. You're part of their ecosystem either. But the fact of the matter is you have to show a certain degree of loyalty, right? Because that's where you're making your money. So what do you do? How do you exist being in that Drake or Kendrick Lamar ecosystem when everything about Drake and Kendrick Lamar is being weaponized?
At this point, there's a great scene in my memoir where this guy named John Norman and Jake Action, we went on a triple date, double blind date. And we're walking down Broadway in San Francisco, and I see a whole line of police cars driving like Starsky and Hutch the wrong way. And I just slow up and I'm calling their names, Jake, John, but they're focused on the girls who are waiting on the corner for us. I just stop walking, and I see some Latino guys across the street pointing at them, and it dawns on me that the cops are who are running down the middle of Broadway in San Francisco with nightsticks drawn, that their intended target, Jake and John. And so I just stop walking, you know. Latino guys point at me, there's another one. And I give him, you know, the semaphore of, what are you doing? And then they kind of go, okay, let this other one go. They let me go. And I watched in real Technicolor my friends get beaten with nightsticks savagely before being thrown handcuffed into the paddy wagon and driven off to a fate unknown. All I had to finagle at that point was a ride back home and a ride for the girls who I got to hang out with for the rest of the evening.
So, sorry about the guys. There were only three of us, and now just... Exactly.
And it worked out well for me, as I'm intimating. But if you're in the Drake or your Kendrick camp, you shut your fucking mouth and try to be as small and as visible as possible. Mm. If you've had a lot of social media presence stuff, start showing photos of your cat and your meals. You know, do not, you know, because these guys may this could be just a publicity stunt. You know, some of these guys have gotten together and said, hey, let's have a beef and we could drive sales, you know, and they'll reconcile and you'll be, you know, having to worry when you go, you know, to do a festival or something, just being a part of the support team. Say nothing, do nothing. I mean, if you're not in the direct line of being able to give these people advice, you just Homer Simpson it back in the bushes. That's all.
What's your take, John?
Well, first off, I'm thoroughly confused by this whole feud. And now I know like parents felt in the 70s and 80s, and when I was a, you know, kid, when Vince Neil and Axl Rose are feuding, or you know, when the Sammy Hagar and David Lee Roth and shit, you know, like, and kids would get so worked up, and Prince and Michael Jackson were getting so worked up over these feuds, and my parents like, what is this nonsense? And I can't follow any of this shit. I don't know what they're fucking feuding about. I don't know what people are on the internet pointing out whole diagrams showing all the people are showing me the rap lyrics and like, oh, he compares himself to John Stockton. So that means, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, how do it's enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a, you know, how do I follow this stuff from artists? Cause I'm too old to have been part of their music category anyways. So that's number one. I'm really confused by the whole thing. So I'm going to give my best attempt. If I was one of the people in their camps, one is, based on everything I read, Drake is getting his ass kicked. That's what it sounds like. Drake is absolutely getting his ass kicked. So there's two possibilities. If you're in the Drake camp, is one is like, God, Drake, you look bad. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I got some info Kendrick Lamar could use. He might say something. I could go to that camp. I'm out of here. That's one. Two is, get the sympathy to tell Drake, you got to do something and you can't win this. So maybe look even more pathetic and maybe people will feel sorry for you that you're getting your ass kicked. Maybe like they'll start looking like a bully. The third thing is, I don't know there is more to this than I can follow. And I do laugh. There was an African-American Princeton professor. And someone well-respected in the rap community talked about how the part he had a problem with Kendrick was the music. He should have taken better beats for his rap. So he was like, he was analyzing the musical portion of the debate. And she piped in like, shut up, white boy. This is not your business to. And I'm sitting on the side. I did not know this was a black only thing going on right now. I did not know we were not. The Princeton professor had to come in and tell us that white people couldn't comment on this big cultural phenomenon. So I don't even know where I can even put my input, because I've been told that I'm not allowed to take part in this conversation. This is strictly a inter-African-American discussion, which is weird because Drake is from Canada, right? And he's not United States.
You actually have more stake, John, because you're an American.
Yeah.
You live in California on the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, you're more in touch with the culture than Drake. So, you know, you actually have
probably, I don't know. Well, that's the problem. That's where it's getting him hurt, though, I think, in some ways. As an outsider, and you guys tell me wrong, it's the fact that he is Canadian and firmly upper middle class, did not, you know, he's not from the streets or whatever. He was on some kid show, wasn't he, as a child?
Degrassi.
You know, so I think that's that's being held against him. The stuff about the pedophilia, I have no clue if that there's any truth to that at all. No, I have no way of knowing. But it seems like the fact that he's Canadian and of a different class seems to be something that's being held against him. So,
you know what I hold against Drake? That $450,000 mattress he's got.
Notice betting habits.
I didn't even say bed, because I got a $5,000 bed that somebody gave me. So, and there's like a lot of wooden features to it. But this is a $450,000 mattress. I checked out the company that puts it out. It's fucking crazy. It's crazy. And everybody knew he was chatting up Millie Bobby Brown or whatever that woman's now woman on the show. So, So, but you know, these are both very wealthy men at this point. So I don't give a fuck what they say.
Wait, we're talking about the rapper. I was talking about Aubrey Graham, the teenage actor. I didn't know that someone else didn't know. Sorry, was not aware that he went on to something else.
You know, one thing's crazy about this is, you know, end of the day, it is funny how it's two rich dudes allegedly battling one another, allegedly having legit beef. And I feel bad for Vince Staples when he was like, they asked him what he thought about it. And he said, I think it's sad that while these two black men are arguing, Taylor Swift is the one who's actually fighting for artists like myself to be able to make or retain some to increase their financial revenues from streaming. I mean, where are our principles? And so he was a buzzkill per usual. And I think Talib Kweli came out and was like, we need to think about conscious rappers, buzzkill again. But you know, at the end of the day, the thing is, what I think is crazy, you said who wins, who loses. The problem that Drake has, and I don't even think it's a problem, is the fact that he is more commercially successful than Kendrick Lamar. And the scuttlebutt from people who aren't hip-hop heads is Drake is winning. Why? Because they like Drake. A lot of hip-hop heads think that Kendrick's winning because they like Kendrick. I mean, it goes to like any kind of feud that goes on, Van Hagar versus Van Halen. It's just a matter of taste, who you like and who you're going to root for and who you're not going to root for.
And Quake and Quisp for the older people among us.
And the crazy thing is, what I think is wild is when you talk about John like trying to understand certain things, the basic issue is Kendrick Lamar was a poet from back in the day when he was in elementary school. Like, he's a poetry kid who did raps. And I'm not saying this put him down. So in terms of double entendres and complex metaphors and referencing certain things, I mean, he did. I mean, he got the Pulitzer Prize, you know, as a rapper. But whether one wants to put some cachet into that or not. But the fact of the matter is, it's not as accessible as Drake's music. And in terms of disses, Pusha T's takedown of Drake was more on point and more understandable to people that didn't have to understand much of history. It was to the point. You're hiding a child. Let that kid come home. How dare you talk about my fiance? Let's look at your Beyonce. But the fact of the matter is, even though Drake got eviscerated, that was years ago and he still had a career. So at the end of the day, whether or not it's something that they're both chuckling behind closed doors, counting the money, because now people are talking about them when before they were talking about student protests and other kinds of things, the bread and circuses, I guess we'll find out what happens. And just hopefully nobody that's making crumbs gets caught in the crossfire, because as we all know, those are individuals, unfortunately, who end up, you know, suffering the most in these kinds of situations. Boo hoo.
Or like Russ Meyer says, small businessmen always takes it in the rear in America.
Speaking of that, sounds like a perfect quote from the Legion of Doom, John.
Yeah, I'm just shocked. I'm shocked Russ Meyer talked anything about the rear, considering what his preoccupation was the front. You know, this week's Legion of Doom, it's an actual Legion of Doom crime. It's not someone that I'm going to say they don't have the personality of like a Joker or Penguin. They're not this like, you know, or, you know, like a maniacal figure, and they don't have the charisma, but the crime was so Legion of Doom. And I don't know if you guys heard this. In fact, no one even knows about it. That's the part that's crazy. It's getting no publicity. And it's the FTC launched an investigation into some Texas shale traders because apparently traders, shale suppliers in Texas and other oil companies were working with OPEC, and OPEC already, you know, collude. They were colluding with them to drive the price of oil up in America. So what Americans don't know is basically every American, it rose inflation up and that increased the, that went to profits in the oil companies. But every American during this this period paid basically, it cost every American $1,000 each.
What?
So from every American, they stole $1,000, the oil, the shale companies, part of the scam. And they, the guy that did it, and I guess I got to make him the head of this conspiracy, his name's Sheffield. He put it together. He contacted, they had like hundreds of emails between him and OPEC. He also said that he's going to keep in line the independents. Basically, they're threatening the smaller ones to make sure the price of oil, even if it got up to $200, you are not going to pump more oil. We're going to make sure everybody stays in line together. And that's, I mean, there's not more to say than the fact that they conspired. They put a plan together, conspired, and stole $1,000 from every American. And we didn't notice because it was all, we thought it was all part of inflation.
And we're all caught up in Drake and Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I wonder if Kendrick has a lyric about that. If he had a lyric about that, maybe we would pay attention, but nope.
You know, I'm going to be Boeing'd.
I almost went with Boeing again, but I already had them as lead because there's like, you know, there's so many, they have so many workers they got to now kill because they have so many more whistleblowers. There's just a whole list of people they got to get rid of.
Damn. Who's Miss CAF, Eugene?
Oh, usually I say, I hate to do it. But in this instance, I love to do it. I told myself at one point, and it was a very distinct point, I can give you the day and the hour where I had this thought, and the thought was, in a nutshell, I will stab him in the back as long as there's strength in my arm to stab him in the back. Every opportunity that presents itself, I will embrace. Every moment that I can, I will knife and knife away. When that arm gets tired, I'll switch to the other knife. And Octave Mirbeau said in his famous book, The Torture Garden, there's some backs that cry out for the knife, and his is one. And I'm speaking, of course, of, you know, I want to say fugitive financier, but he's not a fugitive yet, nor is he a financier. So we'll just say grifter Gus Carlos Watson. 2:30 tomorrow. Wednesday in court, he is trying to pack the court with every single black person he knows, which amounts to his family and his lawyer, who tried to run down her wife with who's running from the house with their 4-year-old child. That's his lawyer. The legal team is doing this thing, Justice Watchers. If you read my Substack, you know exactly how I feel about it. So they're going to try to Mau Mau the judiciary, the Eastern District of New York, the Justice Department, by scaring them that this is a race-based person. Yes, yes, I did do all those things. However, I am being singled out for doing those things because you are fueled by racial animus. And it's like, oh, I guess that's the way the judiciary works now. So you can go home, Mr. Watson. You're not going home, Mr. Watson. I think this is maybe an attempt to reduce sentencing. But I once called him to his face a visionary, and he felt very proud about that. And I said, let me explain. You're seeing things that aren't there. So he kind of got quiet at that point in time. I mean, this idea, you're going to beat this, or are you looking for a reduction? You're the second, third person, your chief of staff and your chief operating officer already pled guilty. Testimony against you. They've got emails. They got texts. They've got tweets. They've got everything. They've got talk about smoking gun and receipts. They've got hundreds of these things. You're not getting out of this. But I like your never say die, you know, Dr. Strangelove flying to Russia on a bomb type way to go. But you're dead. You're walking around. You're talking. You're laughing that fake smile of yours with that fake smile of yours. And you're dead. You don't know it, but you're dead. You're 54, 55 years old. It's a 37-year sentence you're looking at. Even if they give you half of that, even if they give you 10 years of that. You're getting out, and the only way for you to get out of this hole that you've dug for yourself is to say, okay, I'm going to tell the truth about what happened, and that's a $1 million seller. Otherwise, the hustle is blown. The hustle is blown. Get out of the bank. But you didn't, see. So off to the trial. I would pay anything. I mentioned on the Showstopper, if you were in New York and you can find yourself free to go to the court and sit there, I will give you money. So I want somebody who could be there, take a picture or somehow just to tell me what happens. Because I couldn't find a publication to pay for me to go there, but I really want to see. Of course, what he did as a counter, I mean, it's just my crazy mind that thinks of this as a jiu-jitsu counter, is that were I to show up, it would be assumed that I was one of the justice watchers. So,
pulling Eddie Murphy and like going whiteface,
whiteface, exactly. But I think seeing me would shake him up enough. But that's not my point. My point is, like I said, to knife until there's nothing left to knife. Yeah,
who's that? Get him out of the car.
But
you lie.
yeah. And he owes me. Yeah, that's right. Like JB says, he owes me a bunch of money. You know. He is misty as fuck, and I don't know how long this trial is gonna last, but I hope it lasts a day, and we can get right to sentencing.
I wonder, you know, how they have people that are hackers and they recruit them to work for the government, right? And you have intelligence agencies working with certain levels of criminality to expose different kinds of other elements. Yeah. I'm trying to think, Carlos Watson, I got an offer for you. I'm aware of a lot of Negroes like myself, grifting. I can help you unveil their scams.
Well, all you're doing is talking about what Barry Minkow did. If some of you go back in time, John might remember that, from ZBest, started at a carpet cleaning business out of his bedroom when he was like 12, turned into his multi-million dollar conglomerate, and then they found out he was Ponzi scheming people. Went to jail. What's the first thing he did when he got out of jail? Went on a corporate sponsored tour about how you can avoid getting scammed by people like him. It's a genius move, but it took a certain amount of self-reflection and willingness to embrace what you've done, which thus far seems to be beyond the execrable Watson.
Man, thanks for joining us. For those who are in the New York area who can go, let us know. Live stream if you can. Give us reports. It'll be
just pictures of Carlos walking in and out of court. I'd pay $20 for those.
Hey, you're a regular J. Jonah Jameson. Parker! subscribe if you haven't already. Give us a like. Thank you. I saw that. Thumbs up. Appreciate it. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/theshoesfit. Follow us on Twitter, at Eugene S. Robinson, at Alexi Old Hate, not the face. Eugene's giving us a thumbs up, and there's no effects. But there are effects when you guys give it a thumbs up, though.
Yeah. I see nothing.
Seven secret sources of inspiration. What do you pimp, John?
Well, I might be going to New York to collect that $20 a photo of that. I might need the money. So, but I am pimping the Hey Not the Face podcast. We just got done. We just posted today an interview with Steven Espinoza, former Showtime Boxing, now advising PBC. I thought it came out great. A lot of interesting details about, if you want to know how to, you know, putting together a fight, what about the economics, the future of boxing, MMA, why the big mistake was letting Strikeforce go, and the second big mistake Viacom made was thinking they could recreate it with Bellator. We talk about all that stuff, so that's worthwhile. Hey Not the Face podcast. Let's focus on that right now.
You know, it's funny, remember when I was at CBS, they had this big old presentation with their IP attorney, their head of the IP, and they were talking about different kinds of things and policing and all this kind of stuff. And I raised my hand. I was like, I noticed that Strikeforce, you don't seem to take the videos down as quickly as the UFC. Is that because you're trying to get some kind of market share? I'm like, no, we just don't have the staff. Oh, what are you talking about, Black Eugene?
I got the memoir, of course. I'm stuck at 58 reviews. Many people here have actually put reviews there. they've told me that it's a very important aspect of selling books on Amazon. So if you haven't reviewed it and want to be number 59, I'd appreciate it. But I got that. Nothing else. Nothing else. Except
Wow.
Lola, my third daughter, graduates this weekend.
Oh,
So
wow.
that's a bit of excitement.
Until next week, no matter how tight, loose, or uncomfortable, remember these words. On this show, the shoes always fit, so we can never acquit.
You gonna call Jake Shields now, Eugene? Get
Oh
back in
man.
touch with him.